Good evening, everyone. It is Wednesday night, and it is 7 o'clock. Now, on Wednesday night, what we do is we gather here in our little, you know, our living room together over the kitchen table. We're in the kitchen over the kitchen table with some freshly made tea, and we just have a conversation together. And we've been having a conversation for, this will be our fifth week of this ongoing dialogue, really, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
Just a chat. We're chatting about
something.
And what we've been doing in the last 4 weeks, this week being the fifth, is we're chatting about a volume that EJ created many years ago that is just as dynamic as anything we've worked with the work groups, and it is part of the Secret Talks series, but we have had it printed and made it available, and a number of people have already received their copy, and we just got a new printing back today, and if you have a book on order, it'll go out to you within the next couple of days, and you'll be able to catch up. So what we've been doing thus far is we've been through the first 31 pages or so of the book, and last week the second 20 pages, the first class is really the first 10, and then we've gotten into the next 20 pages, and we just dialogued. We had 8 exercises that we culled from that material. And the idea was is that individuals would go and see what exercise appealed to them.
That's right.
And then they would do that exercise and bring the fruits of their labor back to this group.
And share.
And share it with this group. And in a certain way, that creates the weaving together of the group. There are individuals that have individual dynamic individual personal practices, and that is important for all of us. But sometimes when you bring it back into the group, there's a process that goes on very much like weaving. It is as if you take the fabric of that effort and you put it together.
And as we've been notating for the last, or actually, our scribe has been notating for us for the last 4 weeks, we have identified some qualities that we recognize as part of that group weaving process. And I think you just used the word fabric, and we could certainly apply the use of the word attention, intention, and focus as some of the weaving component. So the efforts that we contribute with each other to this aim are getting shared with all of us when we have our Wednesday night gathering together. So do you want to just briefly side shoot the conversation from the dining room so that it goes in at this time?
So in the Institute, when you're working with somebody as dynamic as EJ, many, many things are going on at the same time. Right now what he is doing, and in fact this evening he's gotten up to pursue this particular effort, he's perfecting a few of the orbs that have been created within the game system that he and his team have perfected over the last 20 years, really. Now, what is an orb? An orb is a caricature of an actual Bardo space that you can actually transit through.
Run around in.
You can run around in it. And it's, if you read, we've read the we went through the ABD a couple of years ago, and I brought in a lot of examples from the actual Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the concept there is that you read and you read, and so that the chambers become second nature to you.
Yes, and the familiarity is what you are optimizing when you use these tools that EJ makes available for us, because you do not have to travel anywhere to get that experience. You don't have to learn to speak a different language or apply yourself in any particular manner, except that your computer download the orb and proceed. And that's quite a challenge for some people, and I understand that. But compared to in the old days, having to hustle your carcass onto a camel and ride across the desert to Mecca, or the equivalent thereof, in order to get yourself familiar with those Bardo chambers and the teaching, we've come a long way, baby.
We've come a long way, baby. And as the technology is able to express what EJ and some of these other illuminated individuals know already, mm-hmm. then they can express it, and it makes it more possible for many individuals to see, know, and experience things that they vaguely hear about in various poetry readings that they may wind up in.
Nice. Very nice.
So
we were reminded in the dining room just, 15 minutes ago when he was taking a little break, the blogs that EJ writes in on a regular basis deliver the information about the use of the tools that he is making for us now. So it's current time notification. If you don't know about the blogs, then you go to...
It's Gorbag's World.
Gorbag's World.
.org.
And
then you can explore the conversation about this particular type of material. The oddity of that we're dealing with here, I'll give you an example that I know a great deal about, okay?
Please do.
I happen to be, I'm a professional accountant and CPA and a tax accountant. I know I am an expert in the world of accounting, and I'm very good in the area of taxation. So sometimes I come across a company, like right now I've gotten a lot of new clients, and these clients say, well, they want to get their books in order.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at their material, and I see how vastly different they are from a competent set of books, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And it's immediate that I can see that. But what can I say to them?
Mm-hmm.
How can I begin? How can they possibly begin? I know how far off they are. And so I began with, for instance, the first thing I instruct is to get a filing system together. As simple as that is, just a physical filing.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it starts to focus their business. They're still 100 miles away from a sophisticated set of books.
Okay. They're making a start.
So they make a start. So we're dealing with an individual who is an expert in an area that we're not used to. And he's saying, gosh, how do I communicate this to these guys who don't know that language?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He's a language instructor in a certain way.
Yeah.
But you can't say it in a way that where the linear mind gets. You have to express it in a different manner, and which always makes me want to start and do Life in the Labyrinth again, by the way, because it is that other manner, that
it
other
is.
Language.
Yeah.
But we have another methodology, which is these orbs, and he's He's visually, and in a certain way, physically demonstrating this this material. So if you get a chance, go there to the Gorbag's World. And I'm not sure, is that where you can go to get a link to download the orbs?
No, there's two sites for download.
Dan, can you give her the phone?
We're getting the scoop here.
And Dan, if you can put in links to the chat, that would be great. The two sites for downloading, earthgame.com.
And spell that, please.
U-R-T-H-G-A-M-E. And that's the orbs, and they're broken up into categories. And so on the first page, before you go to a list of all the orbs, you can see there's a list of different categories, like remedies and maybe cleansing is one, or I can't remember the categories. And then the ones that are being released very recently that Gorby is working on are, and there's not too many yet that are available for download, but it would be from godgames.org, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Dan will check that out, and he will put in the link. But like, I think the Oval Office is there, mm-hmm. or maybe, and sometimes he'll explain that he's putting something out, and you can download it. But then he'll want to offer an update for it, which once you've downloaded an orb, I don't think you have to pay a second time for the updates because you must have your number. Because I think in the downloading, from the downloading service, you get a number. And so you want to keep that so that when there's an update, you can get your update for free. And if you want to check the details of that, Claude Needham would be the best person for that kind of administrative detail. Then he's just put up Putingate, as in Putin, the Russian head of state. I'd be so kind as to call him that. Mm-hmm. that's a very interesting orb. Anyways, he called them this weekend because it's at Easter workshop this weekend, if you don't mind me referring to that. Was very involved with this phase of the work. And he said really what he's trying to do is deliver something that can provide one with a God experience. And it's you may not get that right away because you have to become more familiar with the tools that you're working with. But that is the goal. And just a few hours of exposure, people who came to the workshop and heard some of the talks and experienced some of the orbs and the orb building that is being offered, it's called Blue Lining, and it's starting at a very, very elementary level. People wrote back and said, and also people here in the workshop, said that like they'd go outside and they started seeing the world differently. It was quite remarkable for them. It was like an altered state.
Let's go into that for just a little bit, okay. So these are individuals that were at the workshop and they actually did blue lining. Is that correct?
Well, I think, you know, Jaswant, I don't know if he even got to doing the blue lining because his email came back on Saturday. Maybe he did a little bit. Okay. But I know that on Friday people were offered Putingate to run through. So they had the experience of moving through the orb and learning how to maneuver. And then on Saturday was the first day where they got the elementary steps using House 1,
mm-hmm.
which was very, very beginning building skills, which is called blue lining. And It was like a very, really good session because it was very step-by-step instruction, and we were broadcasting from the desktop.
So what that means, blue lining means, is that you are in a artificial environment on your computer, and you are building, through this technique called blue lining, a structure. And as ever since I've known him over 30 plus years ago, EJ makes the ease of entry remarkable. When I first started selling jewelry, from when I was living in Colorado, it was mm-hmm. just a matter of show up. We'll create everything else for you. So in the same way, so then the individual, here's the point I wanted to make though, Marvette, is that when the individual's actually doing it, when there's a physical participation, then that cognitive shift occurs for them when they go out into the world. It's not, maybe it is just running the orbs too. I would imagine that that is the case. But doing the blue lining is godlike in its creation. And it's something that stays on your skin when you do that. And that's the process that we are going to be talking about tonight and in next week mm-hmm. on this idea of creating the fabric together, the warp and the weft of weaving
mm-hmm.
and creating different, that's what you do that you bring to the group. You actually have to go do the work.
I'd like to add another comment because the closing circle, I was so impressed by this group that was here and also everyone is given the opportunity here and online to comment about the workshop, their experience, whatever they want to say. And one of the common threads from the people that were here, and there was a core group that was here, about seven people, and they had an awareness of the group that they had never had before. And, you know, like they, and some of them very, very boldly admitted that they were kind of like loners and that they eschewed groups and that they really had stress in relation to being in groups. And, you know, it was, but there was a diversity. Not everybody was so dramatically anti-group. But all of them had some kind of awareness, and one of the people that was most unable to be in a group realized when she had to take a break from the group and had to leave the workshop that she what she was throwing away. She made a transformation there, you know, just to come to that perception and just to come to that wish of, I want to do something different.
So this individual came to the space. That was her payment, in a sense, the physical
yes.
movement from her silo of activity
mm-hmm.
to this space.
Mm-hmm. Shared group space.
So the purpose of being sane from time to time to participate has little to do with me. It has to do that when you do that and you ask a question, which is in, we'll get to in a few minutes, is the, it's you wind up weaving and creating that magical weave that creates what we're looking for in group, particular group work. And
thank you, Marvette.
Thank you, Marvette, for that update. And Dan, thanks for putting that
in the chat.
In the chat.
Good. So people have access.
So there was a couple of exercises that I glossed over last week
mm-hmm.
that were important that I wanted to get to. And we're going to cover one. I want to mention it and point to it. And the other one, we're going to get into it a little bit more in depth. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first one was commentary was based on a comment, an email that was sent by David Plank.
Yes.
Okay. And David read through the eight exercises that we gave as examples, and the one he mentioned was interested in mediums,
yes,
and which is chapter 7 on page 14 of Work of Groups, okay? And actually, I think I'll just read that chapter real quick.
Me too.
Just this less than a page.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to read his commentary, okay?
Good.
Thank you. Okay, chapter 7 on mediums. Chapter 7 on mediums. The thin line which separates pupil and teacher corresponds to client, seeker, and medium. The relationship of client to medium to entity is small, medium, and large. Q. Why is that individual called a medium? G. Because a medium is in between. Also, a medium provides the vehicle for contact between the little cosmos and the big cosmos. Should I read that again?
Mm-hmm.
G, because a medium is in between. Also, a medium provides the vehicle for contact between the little cosmos and the big cosmos. While one is a pupil, one uses the first letter of the first name. When a teacher, or more exactly, a medium, one uses the first letter of the name under which one has patronage, the family name.
Mm-hmm. Patronage.
Patronage, the family name. Some people say your first name and last name. Okay? So here's what David wrote. For the past 3 months, I've been participating in an online reading group of seekers gathered to learn some of the principles of the work. When I read chapter 7 of Work of Groups, I was struck by this line. The relationship of medium to entity is, and now he's capitalized this, small, medium, and large. I immediately recognized that this was the work exercise that I was currently engaging.
Mm.
For the longest time, I've seen myself as small. This is especially true in matters spiritual. I hesitate to make observations issuing from my own experience standing. As I watch this group floundering to shake off the psychobabble of their Enneagram personalities, I realized that I had to assume a new role, which turns out to be that of a medium. I had to overcome the inertia that was keeping me small to attempt to contribute some of the work principles that I've learned over the years to the discussions of the group. So I've made a good number of observations to the threads that have developed, but I began to question the legitimacy of my contribution. With the clarification of this chapter on mediums, I'm encouraged to continue to act as a vehicle for the contact between the little cosmos and the big cosmos. And it helps to realize that this work is not a one-size-fits-all response to the enigmas of life. David Plank.
Thank you, David.
Good work.
I so appreciate that you can speak in such clarity about one of the aspects of reading this material with others, which is, oh, I don't know if I should say anything or not. And certainly contributions of any form are generally not only accepted but welcome because you do not know what you don't know until you do. And there's no way to test that except by putting out what it is that you either think you know or hope that you know. If you give yourself the opportunity to test it, you can find it out. And there's no nicer place to test than with a group that has got the same wish for all. Take it. Marvet.
That reminds me of the comment that EJ often makes about you don't know what you know about something until you pass it on.
Nice. Yep.
And that's, you know, really, really what he's always encouraging people to do.
Yes.
And we've talked about in many of the books that we've worked with, this idea of confession. And it's not a Catholic thing where you're confessing your sin. It's just you're declaring.
Mm-hmm.
You're declaring for the essential self.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, as whatever your voice might be, and you might consider that voice small, but maybe you're called at that point to share that voice, and share it, because it enlivens everybody in the circle. Whatever you happen to say. Okay.
Did you get more than one email this week?
No, that was the only one I got
okay. That
I wanted to share.
Okay.
But I did want to make a comment on the idea of mediumship
mm-hmm. And
banishing.
Oh. Now you've brought in another context.
Okay, so last week a number of individuals talked about the idea of banishing and how a certain sense of presence creates a banishing. This will be very important in the next week in the reading that we're going to be doing coming up, of holding a space in a certain way. It banishes a certain lack of clarity, or the psychobabble, as David Blank
mm-hmm.
is saying.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're able to just not participate and be in a sense of clarity, there's a banishing effect to that. And if you're able to open up that door, then you can bring in the voice that is waiting to come through. And you are the vehicle to that voice. This is not a thing of superiority, it's just a fact. It's a factual thing. Okay? Anyway, any other thoughts on that, neither mediumship or the banishing concept?
Eric Brummel says the medium is the message.
Well, in a certain way, Eric is right, because your presence in itself, unadorned, is the message. If you can stand in a sense of presence, Eric is a salesperson. He does a lot of work selling, and I've been in that space a lot too, and I enjoy it a great deal. Your first effort is to invoke presence, and when you can invoke presence, that in itself is the beginning of a message. There will be some that can hear that message. Okay?
I'd like to speak to the term banishment.
Okay.
Because there are some contexts in which the word banishment implies a certain form of punishment or prejudice against an activity or a group of individuals. We're using this term here very precisely, and I can give two simple examples. many, many years ago, I was in what we would call a tekia, or a study house, with the group in Vancouver. And we had an instruction to maintain a meditation ongoing 24 hours a day, which means that we split up our time in the room doing the meditation to correspond with our work activities and life responsibilities. And one of the named functions of the one that was keeping the meditation going during your stint was to also perform cleansing or banishment if needed in the space. And the simplest form of it was to have a rag or some form of wiping and to declare, return from whence you came. And that was the most fluid form of keeping the space maintained without interfering with the ongoing meditation, because they both had to operate in this chamber at the same time. And the second example was, many, many years later, there was a workshop that started with a cleansing of the space, physical cleansing of the space, but in a particular order. And they go, well, what? Why are you doing it like that? And they say, because if there is a ritual that you have taken the time and the energy to learn and perform correctly, the ritual will deliver back to you what is required to go on. So it's like setting the foundation in place.
Yes, nice.
So a banishment for me is the opening cleansing to a ritual chamber. And if you think about your internal self, how do you banish the little mind and bring forth the invocation of presence? Those are both two activities that are occurring within, quote, the same space, but with different intention. So when we use the word banishment, we're talking about the preparation for sacred space. That's the simplest.
Yeah, and there's an enormous history of that, and it's very important. Another thing that, and as Pat was talking, that it made me realize is that if, I think Eric Bummel's still living in the Arizona area, and near Prescott, and let's say he's going to go do a jewelry show this weekend, which he might, I don't know, but if he does, and he exercises what we learned in the course called Invocation of Presence, he will invoke his presence in the space. Now, here's an interesting thing about that. That's an objective space that he will be in. And it's a space that I know I am linked to when I know he's in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay, and this is why from time to time I want you to share, well, I'm going to go do a jewelry show, or I'm hosting a labyrinth walk on the full moon on this specific day. Not in generality, but Saturday night I'm doing this, or whatever it is. And I'm confident that you understand the principles of invocation of presence. And as we bring that together in this space, we're all sharing it.
Right, and it builds. It builds on each contribution.
Yeah. Now we're going to get to the next one. Go ahead, Dan.
Tiangelo says, presence banishes a space simply by occupying it.
Yeah.
And certain frequencies that are incompatible with presence seek activity elsewhere.
They just can't be.
They can't exist.
They just aren't there. It's not a battle.
No.
It's just either or.
Yeah, thank you, Pianjo.
And Eric Brummel says, building jewelry this weekend.
Good.
So he's going to be building, so there's a statement of activity. And on some day in the weekend, my attention is going to go, oh, Eric's grinding away on his
mm-hmm.
necklace or his bracelet or his whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain oneness that occurs at that point. I'm there with him and he's there here with me. People? Okay. So, thank you for those comments. But I wanted to get on to the next part, which we kind of didn't go into. And this is on...
We slid over.
We glanced at it as we drove by. and we want to stop and park right outside. And this is chapter 10 on page 19, if you have your hymnals available. And that's, Pat, do you want to get us started
do.
On this or
I certainly
read
do.
It through?
Yes,
or?
I do. This is chapter 10 on asking questions. Unless our questions evoke force, necessity, and drawing down, they have no effect. I have seen so far that it has something to do with need. Need feels like a substance. Sometimes questions are answered without having to ask. G, to obtain data from the old man, you must unlock artifact which has data. X would sometimes all night ask questions. I would be forced to lay organic fatigue aside. D, so to evoke or invoke an answer, then we must pull in some entity which has the answer. G, evoke by asking a question which must be answered. This always requires a seance. Some people cannot seem to evoke. They may ask a question I would also like to have answered, but in such a way that no seance results. I am tired now, but if you ask real question with necessity, we could continue until dawn. Unfortunately, none of us could ask that question, and G dozed off. In case you didn't hear this a couple weeks back, there is a multitude of examples of this very specific technique under the title of Talks of the Month. And if you just look at the titles of Talks of the Month, you might be able to surmise the question that was asked that produced that talk of the month. But if you can't, send me an email and I will give you a couple to get started with. But for me, the subject of asking a question never has any potency unless it has the formulation required to necessitate an answer. And that's where I started last week. I said it has to do with the formulation of the question. It's not just asking a question. It's not even just the words of the question. It has to do with where are you standing in yourself when you ask that question? What is your intention? But what are you asking it for? Do you need it? Is it something you have to have? Does it require an answer? And that's where I said my hesitation came from when I said, that's the question that I picked, and then I, you know, got all nervous about it. Do I really deserve the attention of the group on my question? And how can I formulate it so that it's not just for me? And that skill of how to formulate a question, that you can only do with a group. It's one of the reasons why group work is so incredibly productive. Because if everyone puts in the little bit that they have, you actually can work it until you have a question that is worthy of being asked and deserves an answer.
You know, that's a very difficult So the formative mind starts to think, gosh, is this question have all that stuff that Pat was just saying? And he's like, that's a lot of stuff, right? Pretty like da-da-da-da-da-da. And, well, that's just the wrong approach to it. Okay? If your brain starts to go that way, you're on the wrong approach. The right approach is your inner sensitivity. You have a sensing inside. Like Margaret was talking about going on the sites and looking at those orbs. I thought, well, how would somebody choose? Because there's so many orbs. And I realized that the way to choose, you naturally are attracted to, whatever reason, go with that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a question formulates in you. So if you can rest with the formulation, maybe it's a question that the group needs to have tonight. And for whatever angelic reason, it is coming through you. So maybe there's a duty that is not you-ness, you know, that says, oh, that was a really important question. That person's important. You can't judge that, actually, now that I think of it. You can respond to your inner sensitivity. And if you're working with your invocation of presence, you're beginning to grow that conscience and that inner sensitivity. And you go, well, here's a question. Why is this question coming through right now? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going to ask it of the group. Mm-hmm. Then you've gone to a different level of work that is not me, 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 but it's maybe you have a job to declare that question into the space.
Well, it's trust. That's, you know, that's one of the elements in just the give and take of what has been shared so far. In this particular text, we have agreed we are not going to take apart what is in the text for information's sake or for understanding. We're going to use it as our tool to discover how we can be and are a group, and what does that mean? So in trust, you declare what you were saying before about confession. You declare what seems to be the truth as you're experiencing it at the moment.
That's right.
Whatever that is, you know, whatever those conditions are. It's just a statement. And it doesn't have any expectations to it. It's quite low-key, actually.
I was down in Southern California, and I was invited to be in a sweat lodge with Coyote's group. And they have, in that particular space, they have jobs that individuals have,
mm-hmm.
very specific jobs. And I was an observer, and in the sweat lodge space, it's pretty darn dark, first of all. You can barely see anything, and there's the fire keepers, and then there's the guide. And for some reason, in the middle of all of this, I was asked a question by the keeper of the space, and he said to me, "Can you tell us something about prayer?" Okay, so that's an example of that why there was no discussion of that. We didn't,
mm-hmm.
wasn't like before we had been talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, quote unquote, out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the nature of the space, we were able to get to something about prayer that was very interesting, because it wasn't a matter of the methodology of the prayer, but rather, can you be the empty vessel through which that prayer comes through? Because if there's any intention in your prayer, in a prayer,
mm-hmm.
and if we can stand in that same methodology here, we might hear from time to time a question coming through. Because the question that's coming through is not your question. It's a question that the group needs tonight or may need next night.
Mm-hmm.
So Pat's giving us a specific method of group work. We have, I don't know, I think there are 10 people online right now. A few people here in this space. Those are all posts
mm-hmm.
where questions might come through that the group needs, and it might need it tonight. Okay?
Mm-hmm. One more thought about this process. There's a visual. I'm not recalling exactly specifically where it's from, but a tall pillar, multiple pillars in the chamber, and atop the pillar is a form of some kind. These might be the kind of things that you would see in the colonnades in Rome or Greece, those kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
but they're not necessarily those styles of form on the top. Anyway, each of those forms is a location to be inhabited.
Mm.
Some of the locations are vacant at times. When all the pillars are standing upright and fully formed,
mm.
then you have the structure which contains the space and allows whatever is there to be brought forth.
Hmm. Nice. All of that from asking a question. How are we doing over there, Dan? Two things then I'd like to close on. One is, Pat, why don't you read what Marvette gathered for us?
Work of Groups, Week Number 4, Group Functions. This is from last week's group. functions of a group. One of the first elements of groupness is that you have noticed a distinction between the singularity and the unity of the whatever it is you're doing. Two, a group can accommodate to any situation. Three, in a group, having the connectivity stimulates the resonance memory. An example was given from Silverdale, stating that he did the dead exercise, which stimulated the resonance memory to link to other invocational spaces to put in the mantra, to pull in the mantra, when in doubt, go limp. Thank you. I appreciate that you write these down because they just go away in my consciousness. They just
And so we have a few of them gathered.
Yeah, this is excellent.
A few of those types of elements.
We're collecting. Dan, did you have something you were going to say?
No. So another element that seems to be coming through tonight of group is this element. The group is a host.
Oh, yes.
The group, as its groupness forms, is a host for angelic messaging that may need to come through.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just another point for that. I'll let you go in the book.
Yeah, as G says it, evoke by asking a question which must be answered. This always requires a seance.
It's
another form of group space.
So next week I thought what we could do is just go ahead and read through page 51 of the text and pay special attention to chapter 18. So read ahead, we're going to read up to page 51, but then there's some very important discussions and I think we'll dive into that one a bit.
Okay. It goes
18.
It goes through chapter 20. Yeah, page 51 is finishing in chapter.
It's a long one.
Really long. Chapter 20 finishes on page 51, so through chapter 20.
Any observations, questions? Additions, subtractions, divisions, multiplications.
Calculations of any kind?
Long division. I think that's it. We're done. Yeah?
If anyone has anything to say, now's the time.
Thank you, Dave and Pat, for guiding us along the path of group work.
Oh, thank you,
Silverdale.
Silverdale.
Glad you're both here tonight.
And thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
I can hear you quietly.
This has been very thoughtful.
We'll look forward to seeing you again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.